Good morning. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm here filling in for Joy Cardine this week. 8 o'clock on a Friday means it's time for the Week in Review. We are going to be talking about the news that happened this week, and there was a lot of it. We've got a couple of guests who will be joining us to help make sense of it all. We'll be asking for your calls as well at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Let's bring in our guest commentators this morning. Georgia Durst-Lottie joins us, a professor of political science at Beloit College. Good morning. Hi, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, sorry about that. Just a matter of finding the right button. Also with us, Walter John Chilson, a former Republican state senator from Wausau and a member of the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame. And he joins us from our Wausau studios. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Georgia.
Yeah. Good morning.
Good to have you along. We're going to be talking about all sorts of news stories this morning, but I want to start out with the state budget. Of course, it got through the state Senate last night. This has been a real wild ride, I think, for the state budget this week. Let's start with Walter John Chilson on this. I've got two basic questions for you. Is it a good budget, and was it a good process?
Well, it's a good budget for solving the deficit situation that the state of Wisconsin faced, about a $3 billion budget. I'm amazed that they were able to do it in one session, in one budget. But it leaves the state, I think, with about a $300 million surplus. So I think they deserve a lot of credit for doing that. It's very controversial, no question about that. I think were I still in the Senate, I would have had a lot of difficulty voting for all the provisions in it, but it was a tough thing to do, and cuts that hurt had to be made.
And Georgia Durst-Lottie.
Well, I think it really comes down to what defines good. Did we really need to solve a structural deficit that accrued over more than a decade in a single session? Given what we've done to part of what makes Wisconsin great, I really think that Walter would have had a hard time voting for some of these because that's not his record. And the process, what happened to Wisconsin? Where's my Wisconsin good government people? It's really appalling the low we've reached in terms of partisanship.
Let's talk about some particular provisions of the bill that you either approve of or disapprove of. If you had to pick one right now, Georgia Durst-Lottie, that you would pick out as a highlight or a low light, I guess. Where would you go?
Well, let's talk about education separately. But the rural broadband, I could not believe when they said they were going to turn this over. Beloit College, where I'm a professor, is part of WISNET, and it has allowed me to stay at the forefront of my profession since, you know, the beginning, because we've been on it since the beginning. The thought that they were going to cut this to the university system, which is, you know, the heart of our human capital development, and to all of those rural schools and the libraries across the state. I know Tommy Thompson never would have done this. I served on a task force while he was governor about how to do education using the internet, and you know, I was just appalled that they even thought about it. So the fact that they kept it, I see as a real highlight.
And Walter John Chilson.
I agree that I was very surprised when they did that, turning down, what was it, $40 million in federal funding. And maybe that was just a ploy they used that they could have something they could back off on and make Georgia and a lot of other people in the state institutions, libraries included, very pleased with the final results.
Any other highlights or lowlights of the budget for you, Walter John?
Well, I guess we can't ignore the most controversial one was the collective bargaining issue. I had trouble rationalizing support of that at first, but I finally came down to the idea that it was not a collective bargaining right that had been stripped away, as the news media continually said. They stripped away collective bargaining rights. They partially changed collective bargaining privileges that had been given to the employees in 1959 for the first time in the nation. And there still are a lot of states that were not as gracious as Wisconsin had been.
And Georgia Gerstlotti.
Well, Walter John's right. There are many states who are not as gracious as Wisconsin, period. And I'm afraid we're becoming like all the other states. It's a tricky thing, this distinction between rights and privileges, as Walter John really knows. And I was on the school board for 6 years. I cannot understand why this was necessary. I do not believe that we've done good by our state in this. If they wanted the public employees to pay more for retirement and health care, they got that concession without taking away the process of collective bargaining. I just think this is a ploy to break the unions and to weaken the capacity for Democrats, and, you know, the teachers' unions are Democrats, for the Republicans to win. That it's about elections and winning.
Let's return to the topic of education again. Georgia, you briefly mentioned some of the cuts to education before, about $800 million in aids to schools being cut while limiting property taxes increases for school funding. Your take on that, and we'll start with Georgia on this one.
I am truly a product of Wisconsin's public education. I'm one of 9 kids in 10 years, grew up on a farm. I'm first-generation college. I had the privilege of going to an outstanding high school in Verona, and then I did my undergrad at Stevens Point and my PhD at Madison. To think that we are gutting and weakening the very thing that makes our workforce strong and special in a post-industrial age seems so short-sighted. And if you look at the countries in the world that are have economies that are expanding, they are pouring money into education. So this seems so backwards and short-sighted and detrimental to the economic health of our state. I just am flabbergasted by it all.
And Walter John Chilson.
Let's draw a parallel. Let's say there's a father who has been able to be quite generous with his children in providing them with some of the luxuries of life, and then all of a sudden he loses his job, and he doesn't have the same income he had. He's on unemployment compensation. He has to cut back on the things that he is giving to his loved ones. I think the state of Wisconsin found itself in exactly the same position. They could not afford to be as generous as they had been in order to solve this tremendous budget hole that started with Tommy Thompson, but basically it was the Democrat administrations that dug us into that deep hole. They didn't use any foresight at all, it seems to me, in cutting back on spending. And these are not permanent cuts. It may even be before Governor Walker leaves office, ends this four-year term, that they'll be able to restore some of that funding as Wisconsin begins to improve its economy and its tax intake.
I don't see any evidence that these are not intended to be permanent cuts. They certainly look like permanent cuts. They walk like permanent cuts. They quack like permanent cuts. It's a duck. They are permanent cuts. That's what's intended. And the evidence I would cite on that is the attempt to really broaden the school choice program across the state. So, in other words, trying to gut public education at the expense of private schools and moving it where public education has been strong and continuing to weaken it. So your analogy about cutting back makes sense, but every governor in the past has worked with a real clear sense of temporary versus permanent cuts. And, you know, let us not say that the Democrats dug us in. I would say both parties are equally responsible, as are legislatures and governors across the states that ended up with this structural deficit. It's a really widespread phenomenon, and both parties did it. You're right, Walter John, there wasn't foresight.
And Walter John, Chilson, can you get a couple comments on the school choice issue that Georgia raised?
There was an effort to expand it into Green Bay and Racine. I think they may have expanded it into Racine in the final analysis, but they are not expanding it into Green Bay. I think after 24 years in the Senate, I've learned that nothing is permanent.
There is that. Another education issue, and we'll start with Walter John Chilson on this. The UW-Madison was not removed, as it turns out, from the UW system. UW-Madison Chancellor Biddy Martin announcing earlier this week that she's got a new job at Amherst. Your thoughts on how all of that played out?
Well, I'm not sure whether the fact that she didn't get her way on separating the University of Wisconsin-Madison out for certain purposes, played any role in her deciding to leave and take the job at Amherst. I think she just decided that was a better place for her to be. It does come at a very bad time for the university. They've got to really scrabble now and try to find a good replacement. But that process is already underway.
And Georgia Durst Lottie.
I knew Lee Dreyfus very well and loved as he regaled his story about how he managed to bring the two state university systems together back in the early 70s. And I think they should be together. The UW should not be separated out. However, her impulse of letting the UW system decide what it does and how it does it with less, I guess I'll say, interference from the legislature is a good one. I mean, they have a much better sense of what programs are growing and shrinking and how to trim and tuck and, you know, be able to bring in outside money, you know, just the whole system. Let the system take care of its own cuts. I see the whole wonderful, extensive UW system that we have. When it comes to what to do with it, it's kind of like Congress and military base cuts. You know, everybody protects what's in their district, and as a result, we don't really have a rationalized system too much of the time when the legislature gets so involved. So, you know, she's gone. I do think the fact that she did this very public thing and, you know, was contrary to the system had something to do with her leaving, but we don't know that, do we?
Let's take a comment now from Melissa, who joins us from Sauk City. Hi.
Hi. My comment is that the analogy of the father who has to cut back when he loses his job, that really doesn't hold water, because Walker and the Republicans have only cut back as far as the poor, education, the social program. He is giving back to the corporations. And when, as I think what's going to happen, our education is going to go down the tubes with the large class sizes and so on. People, I wouldn't move to a state that is taking away from education if I'm raising a family, and it seems that Walker and the Republicans only care about the rich. They certainly don't care about me, because I am poor and I am practically destitute, and I just feel very bad and I'm very worried. That's my comment.
All right, Melissa, thanks for the call. Walter John Chilson, it was your analogy, so I'll give you first crack at responding to it.
Well, it may not be a perfect analogy, but I think it's a pretty good one in spite of the comments of the young woman who called in. These are not permanent cuts. I know a lot of the people personally who voted for these cuts. They are not anti-education, as they're trying to paint it to be by the Democrats in the legislature and outside as well. They are pro-Wisconsin, the pro-Wisconsin people. They just figure we had to get some cuts in that terrible budget deficit, And we got to get Wisconsin rolling again, and we got to get job development rolling again. We care for the people who are unemployed and underemployed in Wisconsin. We are really hurting when it compares to neighboring states. Minnesota is attracting workers and looking for workers. And in our state, we find a lot of businesses who are still considering leaving the state because of the terrible situation we had.
But part of that has to do with, if you look at the two states, the proportion of college-educated people is much higher in Minnesota. And for that matter, if you look at the pay, both Minnesota and Illinois pay lots more than we do in Wisconsin. So my question is whether or not these jobs are going to be the kinds of jobs that attract the high-skilled, high-income people, or are we going to be producing more low-wage jobs that mean that our best and our brightest want to move to Minnesota and want to move to Illinois. And Minnesota really, you know, has a strong social network, social safety network like we used to have. They have, you know, the kinds of good government policies we used to have and gave away. So it's if you want a nice quality of life right now, Minnesota gives you a better one than Wisconsin.
Let's go to Charlie. Oh, did you want to chime in, Walter John?
Well, has that differential happened just in the last couple of months?
It's been a long-standing
difference.
Right, and
people
so,
in Wisconsin, the ones we've been educating for good jobs and middle-income jobs, they've been educated, and I think they're leaving Wisconsin at a higher rate than any state in the union.
Because the jobs that we're offering here don't attract them. We need to do something about that.
All right, let's take a phone call. Charlie is with us from Fitchburg. Good morning, Charlie.
I'm concerned that all of the discussion seems to revolve around where we're going to be making cuts, and not enough to talk about where we're going to be getting revenue needed to provide basic services. The reality is, in 2010, Wisconsin businesses paid about $8.3 billion less than they paid a decade ago. If we'd had 75% of the business taxes paid in 2010 that we had in 2000, we would have had a $4.3 billion surplus instead of a deficit. And what we need to do if we're going to create jobs is make the investments in education and in infrastructure that can attract good-paying jobs. That's the way to balance budget, put people back to work.
Let's start with Georgia Derslotti on that one.
I'm very much in favor of investing in infrastructure and absolutely believe that businesses flock to infrastructure. Business taxes are kind of tricky, and I know some people are going to be shocked to hear me say this, but in the end, the consumer pays the business tax. So that, you know, whatever tax we put on is passed through in one way, shape, or form. Businesses can do nothing else. They have to pass it on. So business taxes are probably not the greatest answer in the world. Figuring out how to do how to generate the economy and keep it moving and take care of that infrastructure, those are all really good impulses, Charlie, and we need to do that.
And Walter John Chilson.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly with Georgia that corporations and businesses have to pass on those tax increases. So it's not a good idea if you're talking about job development to increase taxes on businesses. That's I agree with her 100%.
Georgia Derslotti is with us. Walter John Chilson is with us as well. And we are here in the Week in Review talking about some of the top stories of the week. We've been pretty much focused on the state budget for the first half of the program. When we return, we'll follow up with other big state news of the week, including the Supreme Court decision on collective bargaining, that law now coming into place, and it already faces a federal lawsuit from unions. That'll be coming up after this break. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 28 minutes past 8 o'clock. This is the Week in Review here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, joined this hour by Georgia Durst-Lotti, a professor of political science at Beloit College, and Walter John Chilson, former Republican state senator from Wausau and a member of the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame. They are with us this hour as we sort through the top stories of the week. As I mentioned, we've been pretty much focused on the state budget for the first part of this hour, but other things happened too, and we'll start with Walter John Chilson on this one. The Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled on a Tuesday, I think it was, that the injunction against the collective bargaining legislation that had been in the budget repair bill, that injunction was no good, and so that legislation moves forward. What did you think about that decision, Walter John Chilson? It was awfully fast, and of course it's getting criticism from both sides.
Well, I'm pleased by the decision by the court. Not surprising. I think the only question was David Prosser going to decide not to vote because he had been involved in the controversy indirectly. I think he realized that he didn't have to do that. But he there have been a lot of venom on the court, unfortunately, between the conservative members and the more liberal members. And even in this case, Chief Justice Shirley Abramson, whom I know very well and like a lot, and I know David Prosser very well. They're both wonderful people. I'm really surprised that they've been at each other's throats the way they have been. And Shirley continued this by attacking not only the decision, but David quite personally for his views as being non-productive, not on point, and really kind of off base. So the controversy in the court continues. I do I think they made the right decision. As you have indicated, there is a case now that's going to take that decision all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court on slightly different grounds than had been argued in the legislature.
And Georgia Durst-Lotti.
I think they made the wrong decision. I think the legislature needs to be the beacon of proper behavior when it comes to following public laws that seem to apply to everybody but them. I always teach that, you know, the legislature makes the rules, but, you know, they don't want to follow them themselves in this instance. So I'm disappointed that it happened that way. Like Walter John, I see what's happening on the court as disappointing and difficult and really undermining the belief in law and respect for the kinds of authority that we need our courts to have. And I actually think that there are strong grounds for the federal case that you can't treat different classes of public employees differently. What Walker did with exempting some was so patently supporting those who the unions that tended to vote Republican, and then he had to throw in the transportation workers or lose the federal money. I think there's real grounds for the federal government to turn this over.
Now, there have been some more protests at the state capitol during the week, not quite at the scale of what we saw earlier this year, and there may be some more coming up, too, related to collective bargaining, the state budget, and so on. Georgia Durst-Lotti, let's start with you on this one. Do you see those protests going to go away anytime soon, or what do you see coming out of all this? If they're not going to protest, opponents aren't, what are they going to do?
Well, I think they're going to maintain a presence as we go into the recall elections and as they warm up for recalling Governor Walker. I think that they're going to stick around. Governor Walker did more to revitalize the left, left to center, than anybody on the left could do. I think it's going to stay. I think it's going to be a persistent presence, not a huge presence, but I think we will see some big turnouts when it's appropriate.
Walter John Chilson.
Well, I think those are going to continue, no question about that. maybe on a lesser scale, because the steam does seem to be fading a little bit. But to go back to what Georgia said about the legislature setting the laws but not obeying them themselves, when I was in the legislature, I learned that there is a kind of a given that the legislature knows what it's doing, even though it doesn't appear to that's the case. You know, I'm on a town board right now, and if three of us get together and discuss something, we are violating the law because we are a quorum. We can't even discuss some three people can't even discuss an issue legally right now. That is enforced an awful lot at the local level. But at the state level, the legislatures go into secret caucus, and no press is allowed, no public is allowed. They make all the decisions in the caucus. The Democrats did that when I was there, and the Republicans have done it in this process as well. They don't have to obey that open meetings law, apparently. Nobody has ever raised that as a legal issue, so apparently it's going to go uncontested and continue to go uncontested. The violation was that enough notice wasn't given for the hearing that they held before they passed that controversial collective bargaining law. And it was a matter of minutes only. A matter of minutes, and the public wouldn't have had time to come in and make comments anyway. So I think that's a dead issue. The new one, whether they've created new classes, and as Georgia indicated, they've even added to that class separation by an amendment for transit workers, creating another part of a new class. That may be an issue that the U.S. Supreme Court may consider, but frankly, I doubt it.
You know, Walter John Chilson, I'd like to follow up on the legislative thing, you know, because you can argue about whether they obeyed the letter of the law or not, but I'm wondering, legislators aren't always held in high regard now anyway. How does this help, you know, cement the reputation of the legislature for good or bad?
Oh, I think it's been devastating. Even in the last several years, I've talked to colleagues and observers in Madison who ask, you know, do you want to be back in the legislature? I say no way, and they agree. I remember I said to a former Democrat Party chairman one time he said, I said, I'm ashamed of what's going on in Madison right now with the venom between the houses. And he said, Walter John, we all are. And I don't know, something's got to be done to change that. It exists at the federal level as well, and I don't think it's productive at all in an effort to reach compromise on issues.
And Georgia Derslotti.
Exactly. And what's, I mean, the part that is galling about what the Republicans did is that they really just used the rules, and you know, by not having enough public notice time. I mean, you're talking about the letter of the law here, and that's why they were able to bring the lawsuit. But the spirit of the law. What happened to the spirit of good governance and you know, not having half the population feel like they're being totally left out by dictatorial behaviors of those who have the majority? I mean, it used to be that you respected the legislators, respected the minority, and gave them some room to work and to have impact on what was coming down the pike. That's gone, and the comity, the generosity of spirit in, you know, sort of trusting each other, and especially as human beings, that's all gone. What happened to it? I mean, I can tell you answers to why that is, but we need to get to some other place.
Let's move on. We've got a couple other state items to talk about here. The Senate passed a concealed carry bill for firearms. The Assembly, I guess, is going to be voting on it next week sometime. As I understand it, that bill would require training and permits. And Georgia Durst-Lonnie, let's start with you on this. Is that a good idea?
I am absolutely mystified by why we need concealed carry. I know most of the other states in the union have it. I don't know why anyone would think Wisconsin is a dangerous place. I don't know why anyone would think they need to carry a concealed weapon. Why do we need this at all? It just makes Wisconsin a more dangerous place, as I see it. I was at a wedding in Denver last summer, and my nephews went out to a bar downtown, and somebody pulled out a gun. You know, he had his license. He pulled out his gun at a bar. They left. That's what's going to happen to Wisconsin.
Walter John Chilson.
You mean nobody will be in bars anymore?
Not when they pull out guns.
That'll be a good thing. Well, I don't feel very strongly about the need for a concealed carry, but as you say, most of the other states have it. All but two states have it, and now there will be only one after Wisconsin passes it. I think Illinois will be the only other one. There are plenty of guns out in Illinois right now. I don't think they need to pass concealed carry, but I'm really pleased that they did pass it with a lot of restrictions in where concealed carry can take place and in providing the need for some kind of a license to have a concealed carry weapon.
In other news this week, the state Senate also passed, or excuse me, Democrats are making some legal challenges to the Government Accountability Board's decision to certify the recalls against three Democratic senators. And that's very, you know, it's sort of a murky issue for a lot of people who are trying to follow it from a distance. There are legal challenges out there. Walter John Chilson, where do you think this is all going to wind up?
I think the Government Accountability Board will be given credence in any lawsuit. Again, they scanned all the objections, and they decided that there were still plenty of votes to have these elections take place. I know there were transgressions. There were outside people that came into Wisconsin. I don't like that idea, but it did happen. It's perfectly legal, so I don't think it's going to be overturned.
Well, they did perfectly illegal things, and the real problem here is that the Government Accountability Board didn't come down hard on those illegal things. I mean, it's so ironic that the Republicans are doing that, bringing in the outsiders, not being upset when they do illegal things. Actually, they probably were upset because they're afraid they'd be pitched out, and then they wouldn't have drawn the numbers to get the recall elections. But I mean, seriously upset for good government reasons. At the same time, they are doing everything possible to, you know, ways or fraud in elections. You know, poor people, old people need to have their photo ID, their legal entity. It really is another example of partisan politics run amok, and I wish the Government Accountability Board had at least severely chastised the inappropriate and illegal behaviors, even if they agreed that there were enough votes or enough signatures to let it go forward.
We're going to be taking a break right now. When we return, we will have the Week in Review quiz that you've all been looking forward to. So that'll be coming up in just a few moments. And we'll also be turning some attention to some of the national issues that have occurred in the last week or two. So stick around for all of that. Georgia Durst-Lottie with us, Walter John Chilson with us as well. It is the Week in Review here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mm-hmm.
It's 15 minutes before 9 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review, and this is the Week in Review quiz. You've got about 10 minutes to answer, and you can answer either online by email. That address is talk@wpr.org, or you can give us a call at 800-642-1234. And here is this week's question. President Obama and House Speaker John Boehner are going to try to find some common ground this weekend on how to handle the massive federal deficit. It's not going to be a beer summit, but what activity will Obama and Boehner be taking part in to help lighten the mood? So let me read that for you again. President Obama, House Speaker John Boehner are going to try to find some common ground this weekend, try to solve the deficit, not over beer, but what activity are they going to be doing this weekend to help lighten the mood? So there's the question. You got about 10 minutes, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email works too. That address is talk@wpr.org. We're going to turn our attention now to national news, and Georgia Durst-Lotti and Walter John Chilson are with us on the Week in Review, and I want to start with President Obama. You know, a couple of weeks ago, after the death of Osama bin Laden, his poll numbers looked pretty good, and they often do after something like that. But all of a sudden, the bounce is gone there. Those poll numbers have dropped at 49%, down from 52% last month. What's going on there? Let's start with Georgia Durst-Lotti on this.
There's no surprise there. You know, there is the bounce that comes from something like that. And if people were following it closely and, you know, there have been a lot of other top-level assassinations, I don't know a nicer word to put to it, top terrorists. And, you know, it seems to be doing some good in terms of disrupting the organizing capacity of Al-Qaeda, which is what we've been looking for all along. So all of that should be good. I think there was the big splash and, you know, the bounce is gone. And the bounce is gone because the economy still struggles. And it, people vote their pocketbook and they care about their pocketbook, and couple that with the great divisiveness that's in D.C. right now between the Dems and Republicans, and you know, it just makes people unhappy. And why would we be happy about what's happening in D.C., especially in this economy?
Walter John Chilson.
Yeah, his personal popularity is still very good. I think he's around 45% say they'd probably still vote for the president. But as Georgia's indicates, the 29% say that the nation is heading in the right direction. 62% say it's in the wrong track. And the president also doesn't get a very good grade on handling the economy. Only 41% approve of that. So it's his personal popularity that is holding him up in the polls. And if things don't change, historically speaking, it's very unlikely that the president could be reelected, although he still leads any Republican in the polling on a head-to-head basis.
So do you think that Democrats can take a cue from Bill Clinton? It's the economy, stupid?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, seriously, this is a truism of American politics that people vote their pocketbooks, and, you know, it has to be. And, you know, the irony here is that we hold the president accountable for the economy, and the economy is so much bigger than the president, and so it actually isn't empirically the right move on the voters' part, and yet that's what they'll do.
And Walter John Chilson?
I think that that's probably the case. If the economy continues to stay down in the doldrums, I think the president will have no choice but to look for ways to cooperate. You know, if I were giving him any political advice to improve his stature of the public, I'd make some moves like the question indicates. He's going to... The Week in Review question indicates he's going to get together with John Boehner. Maybe something will come out of that. I don't know how to answer that question correctly, by the way. Maybe they're going to take a cruise on the Potomac.
Well, you know, you're going to have to stick around for the answer because it'll be coming up in about five minutes or so. Republicans also held a debate this week, and there's all sorts of, I don't even remember how many Republican candidates there are right now, but the polls right now aren't showing a lot of excitement. So what's your take on the Republican field of candidates and some of the people who aren't candidates yet but are sort of lurking there in the background? And Walter John Chilson, let's start with you on this.
Well, for a long time, I've been a supporter of Mitt Romney, and he is the one who clearly leads right now. Matter of fact, if you knock out some of the other, I would consider also Rands, Palin, and Herman Cain, Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, you knock some of those out, and Romney's lead jumps to about 43%, the way I understand it, and Ron Paul and Michelle Bachmann are trailing far behind. Rick Perry, governor of Texas, hasn't got into the race yet, but he appears to be a very attractive candidate and may push Romney very hard for that nomination.
And Georgia Durst Latte.
Well, in the Democratic Party, it's the curse of the front runner. So whoever is leading at this point is probably not going to win in the end. Republicans generally don't follow that path, so if Romney is leading now, there's a really good chance he's going to make his way forward. I do think Rick Perry's going to give him a good challenge. He is a little bit underperforming when it comes to charisma, so that will be his shortcoming, I think, but he certainly has the conservative credentials. I know some folks are a little worried that he's from Texas and, you know, they don't really want another governor from Texas as the Republican lead, but I don't follow that reasoning at all. I don't see any reason why Republicans would object to someone from Texas. Bush's legacy isn't that big when it comes to the downside.
You know, Michelle Bachmann got some pretty good press after this, though. And a lot of people gave her compliments for the way she sort of played the whole publicity angle and was able to sort of get out front. Do you think, let's start with Georgia Durst Latte on this, do you think she could turn into a serious candidate?
No, I think that she will draw Tea Party, you know, maybe the 20% of the Republicans. She'll draw some of them. I don't think that she will emerge as a really serious candidate, but I suspect that the Republican leadership in the House is really happy that she is focusing on herself and her presidential aspirations now instead of causing trouble in the House.
Walter John Chilson.
No, I agree. I don't think Michelle Bachmann is the candidate. Maybe you misspoke, Georgia, but Mitt Romney was the former governor of Massachusetts. I think his biggest problem is not a lack of charisma. I think he's got a lot. But
I meant Perry. I'm sorry, did I?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Perry, yeah.
Terry is, that's right, he's the governor, and he's not in yet. But I think Romney's big problem is when he was governor of Massachusetts, that he passed a bill that was somewhat similar to what Obama passed. I think Tim Pawlenty, the governor of Minnesota, said it was Obamacare.
Yeah, he made up a new word.
Yeah. But when he failed to attack Romney at all in that debate, and he was severely criticized by a former governor of Arkansas, Huckabee, saying he ought to fire his staff for giving him ill advice, that he should have been Pawlenty should have been much more aggressive in that debate.
Well, Romney has the general population because he's more moderate, but he may not get through the Republicans for that reason. And I would just point out that the healthcare system in Massachusetts works pretty well.
And we've got Tony in Elkhorn who would like to bring up another national issue right now. Hi, Tony.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thanks.
You know, in listening to all these folks' discussions, I can really see that you know, history has a tendency to repeat itself. And I read, I don't know if any of your presenters there have, but I read Edward Gibbon's monumental work. It was The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire.
Sure, but what happened this week, Tony?
Well, what happened this week was indicative of what's happening, what was pointed out in that volume, which is we're witnessing a collapse of civic virtue.
Okay, in what sense?
Well, we're across the board, from your lady there saying she's frustrated because of the acrimony and at both the state level and at the federal level, the incompetence essentially from a lot of officials, the proverbial, you know, fiddling while Rome burns, but it's a collapse that's across the board. It's endemic in this society now.
All right, Tony, thanks for that. We're not going to talk too much about the fall of Rome, I don't think, but let's talk about Representative Wiener, who made a lot of news this week, and a lot of people could point to that and say, you know, that is sort of indicative of a collapse of a whole bunch of things. And let's start with Georgia Gerstlotti on that. Any surprise that he announced his resignation?
Not surprised that he had announced his resignation. What poor judgment the man showed. Truly poor judgment. So it is a distraction. Let's not give this much time.
Okay, fair enough. Walter John Chilson.
Of all the popular, well-known people who have transgressed recently, I think he's the one who is most psychologically disenchanted with himself. He's he's got some real mental problems, I think. But the other, there have been an awful lot of large, high leaders, especially in government, but also in other walks of life. Given the Frenchman who came over and got himself in all kinds of trouble here in this country, Schwarzenegger is another. They show such poor judgment. It's hard to believe that they think that they are above the being caught, or they even maybe are defying the public to catch them. I think it does show a lack of dignity, and is not a healthy situation for our country at all. I do see some parallels in the fall of the Roman Empire.
All right, fair enough. Looks like I was a little too hasty with Tony there. Let's get to our Week in Review quiz. We've got a winner, I should mention. Laura from Whitewater knew the answer to this, and I'll ask the question again for you. President Obama and House Speaker John Boehner will try to find some common ground this weekend on handling the massive federal deficit. It will not be a beer summit, but what activity will Obama and Boehner be taking part in to help lighten the mood? Walter John Chilson, you say you already don't know the answer, right?
Right.
Okay, well, maybe Georgia Gerstlotti does.
No, I don't.
Well, you know, Laura from Whitewater did. They're going to play golf, apparently. While the Pro Tour is at the Congressional Country Club, President Obama and Speaker Boehner will be in the links tomorrow for a golf summit. However, Press Secretary Jay Carney says he has great confidence that the two will not walk off of the 18th hole with a deal. And Georgia Gerstlotti, do you think anything good will come out of this? And I've only got a few seconds for an answer.
Absolutely, yes. The more that our politicians treat each other socially and with respect and, you know, just general courtesy, we go some distance.
All right. And Walter John Chilson, very quickly.
I say hear, hear, but I just read that everybody in Washington is afraid to go golfing because it looks bad.
Well, there you go. Well, Walter John Chilson, Georgia Gerstlotti, thanks so much for joining us today.
May I say one thing quickly?
Sure, you got five seconds.
Those who like good sausage and good laws should watch Neither Being Made.
All right. Good advice from Walter John Chilson. And don't forget, you can learn more about the state budget tonight on Wisconsin Public Television on Here and Now. And then, of course, Monday at 7 here with the State Capitol Report. I'm Gene Purcell. I've been filling in this week for Joy Cardine. Glenn Moberg will be in on Monday, taking over and filling in there. We had production help this hour from Rob Ferret and Michelle Good on phones. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.